Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Republican U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik has officially announced a run in an ad for New York governor.
The Empire State has fallen.
People are just going crazy over the amount of taxes here.
There's no question, New York is facing an affordability crisis.
Escape from New York? The tax base has been fleeing the Empire State.
Top leaders in New York City say a wave of migrant crime has washed over the city. Foreign gang members terrorizing innocent New Yorkers.
Complete disregard for the law.
And Kathy Hochul's failed policies are to blame.
Stefanik is a fierce ally of President Donald Trump. She represents a conservative district in upstate New York. Stefanik has been considering a run for months. In recent weeks, she's ramped up her criticism of New York Governor Kathy Hochul, often referring to the Democrat as the, quote, worst governor in America, end quote. A spokesperson for Hochul didn't immediately respond to a request for comment Friday. Zohran Mamdani was elected mayor this week of New York City, capping a stunning ascent from little-known state lawmaker just a year ago to one of the most talked-about politicians in the country. Here's Mamdani.
New York, tonight you have delivered a mandate for change, a mandate for a new kind of politics, a mandate for a city we can afford, and a mandate for a government that delivers exactly that.
Mamdani, a 34-year-old assembly member, defeated former Governor Andrew Cuomo and Republican Curtis Sliwa in Tuesday's election. Here's Cuomo.
Congratulations to Zohran Mamdani. Tonight was their night, and as they start to transition to government, we will all help any way we can because we need our New York City government to work. We want it to work for all New Yorkers because our city is the greatest city in the world.
Sliwa conceded the race this week about half hour after the polls closed, wishing Mamdani, quote, good luck, because if he does well, we do well, end quote. With the victory, Mamdani, a Democratic socialist, is the city's first Muslim mayor, the first of South Asian heritage, and the first born in Africa. He will also become the city's youngest mayor in more than a century when he takes office on January 1st. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday, to talk about this week's elections, specifically the results in New York City. I asked Yancey what the takeaways were after a Mamdani victory.
Well, you know, if you want to take a look at the big takeaways from this, I think we should back up a little bit to way back when this started, when Andrew Cuomo jumped into the race for mayor of New York City. And I believe we might even talked about it at the time. Everyone, look, he jumps into the race in the early spring. Immediately, he has a huge lead because he's the name that everybody knows. He's got a long history. He was governor for almost 11 years. Everybody else in the race was just either a lower level official, somebody nobody really knew that well, not in a widespread sense. And I think everyone thought it was Andrew's race to lose at that point. He had such a big lead. But there was always a couple of big questions about that, even with his big lead. One was, how was he going to campaign? And two, you knew there was going to be some anti-Cuomo vote out there because he had resigned from office as governor. He had a bruising style that alienated many Democrats. Were the New York City electorate ever going to coalesce behind somebody that was not Cuomo? And the answer to those two questions, we have them now. One is that Andrew Cuomo, widely seen as not running a very good campaign, running an old-style campaign now in the 2020s, where it just seemed like, well, you know, sort of another retread candidate, wasn't up on the buzz, didn't do a lot of social media like Zoran Mamdani did. Didn't catch on that affordability was going to be the real buzzword in this election. So his campaign was not great. Even his own people admitted that. And then second of all, as far as who coalesced the anti-Cuomo vote, who did people flock to? I mean, early on, you might have thought it would have been maybe a Brad Lander, who's been an experienced New York City politician, a name that's been known in the city for a while. Maybe an Adrian Adams, a city council member who might have attracted a lot of votes. But in the end, it was Zoran Mamdani, who from the beginning, he had the left wing of the party, the so-called Democratic Socialist. And then he ran a campaign that just really caught fire with young voters and then older voters who decided they wanted to move on to something new and try somebody else. And, you know, one of the lines that we used in the election night coverage is hearkening back to the history of New York City mayoral elections way back 60 years ago when there was a surprise winner by the name of John Lindsay, a famous columnist wrote, "He was fresh and everybody else is tired." And that was written 60 years ago, but you could almost apply it broadly to sort of what happened to the New York City mayoral race this time around.
Yeah, I mean, I think of Mario Cuomo having served 12 years and then largely voters tired with him. Right. He essentially beat himself in the end, and the position went to the Republican, Governor Pataki.
Yeah, and, you know, Governor Pataki served 3 terms, 12 years, and, you know, again, it's a little bit of a fatigue of a candidate. His numbers were not great. His poll numbers were not great at the end of 12 years. He took a look at that and realized the wise thing would be to go out on a high note, to finish 3 terms and that be it.
Yeah, we're speaking with Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. The thing that got me, Yancey, is, you know, we always talk about the money in politics, and billionaires were lining up behind Cuomo. And still, the money did not impact, ultimately, the result of the election.
Yeah, and, you know, money is a big factor in elections, and it always kind of plays out a little differently. I think that if this were, say, a statewide election where you had to get your message out to Long Island and Westchester and Buffalo and Albany, where you can flood the airwaves with ads, maybe the money would have had more of an influence. But, you know, just talking about one city, it's a huge city. But I think that maybe what we saw was that the money didn't come into as big of a factor when it was just one citywide race here.
I also found it very interesting, Yancey Roy, that when former Governor Andrew Cuomo gave his speech, you know, accepting the fact that he had lost, his supporters in the room were very angry that he lost, and they were expressing that. But he immediately said, no, 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 that's not who we are. You know, we're going to support this guy. It's our city, and I'm going to work with him, and we're all going to work with him to try to make things better. And my cynical journalist brain went, what position is he looking for?
Well, look, I mean, there's been much said over the last few years about the demonization of enemies and rather not enemies, but making political opponents and people with political differences as your enemy. You know, I think of 2008, the presidential campaign, when Barack Obama defeated John McCain, and John McCain, you know, took the high road when some of his supporters during his concession speech wanted to boo Obama, and he said much the same thing. We're not going to do that. We're better than that. But, you know, even though Andrew Cuomo did say that to his supporters, it was also notable that, you know, he was just didn't move off of the point that his viewpoint during this whole campaign was that this was a fight for the direction of the Democratic Party, and making it clear that, you know, his view and certainly in his supporters' view that they have the correct direction for the Democratic Party, the more centrist viewpoint and not the more progressive viewpoint. And it's going to be interesting to see now going forward how that fight continues to play out within the Democratic Party, because we've got congressional elections, we've got legislative elections, and we've got the gubernatorial election next year.
Yeah, you know, I also want to bring the media, that's us, Yancey, into this equation here. I read a really interesting analysis in the Columbia Journalism Review, and they were talking about, and this is the headline, legacy papers have been weird and hostile, told Zoran Mamdani. Now, the New York Times did a non-endorsement for the primary, and, you know, they were really kind of harping on his, quote, lack of experience. And so a lot of these traditional media were wary of a full endorsement, and yet we saw, when it came to media, Zoran Mamdani was ahead of all the other old school politicians. He was out doing videos, Instagram, in the streets, and bypassing a lot of the traditional media to build his coalition.
Well, you know, it's here we are, right? 2025. It's the ways of communicating with your friends, your family, and your constituents and the people that you want to get to vote for you are all different than they were in the last century, as we can now call it. And I think one of the things that came through was, yes, the way that he campaigned was different than what we might have seen even 10 years ago. And it was very effective. And, you know, we've seen that developing over the last decade through use of Facebook and other platforms, Twitter. It's very different than it used to be. And I don't, you know, it's not going to go back to the way it was 20 years ago. It's going to be interesting to see how this evolves as we keep going, you know, forward on the next cycle of campaigns.
It's also going to be very interesting to see the new mayor-elect, Zoran Mamdani, make his way up to Albany with hat in hand and try to get the legislature to work on some of his proposals. Obviously, that is a major issue. Now, he was endorsed by Governor Hochul, which maybe she saw the tea leaves there. And so but he hasn't necessarily endorsed her for re-election. So it's kind of interesting to me that, you know, we can make all the statements about we want during the election about what we're going to do. But then when it comes to a mayor in New York, you got to go to Albany.
Yeah, that's one of the sort of unknown things, perhaps, or sort of under the radar things about how government works, whether it's New York City and New York State and the sort of functions in between, is that even though the city is the biggest city in the country, whoever's mayor, whether it's Michael Bloomberg or Eric Adams or Bill de Blasio, you have to come to Albany to get the green light or the funding for a lot of the things you want to do.
That's Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Dorcia Pliers is the first black woman elected mayor in the history of the city of Albany. As the Legislative Gazette's Jesse Taylor reports, Pliers has already activated her transition efforts.
During her victory speech at Tuesday's watch party, Pliers said it's her turn to take the torch from her predecessors.
Now it's my turn.
Yes.
It's my turn to do the same, to make sure every young person in this city knows that they belong, that they have a seat at the table, and that they can build a future right here in our city. You don't have to go anywhere.
The 43-year-old recorded a landslide victory on Tuesday, earning more than 12,000 votes, or 83% of the total votes cast. Her competitor for the mayoral seat, Republican entrepreneur Rocco Pizzullo, secured 13% of the vote. Appleers isn't new to Albany politics. She has been working as the city's chief auditor since 2020, and before that, she served two terms on the Common Council. She was also endorsed by the current mayor, Kathy Sheehan, and was supported by State Senator Patricia Fahey, Assemblymember Gabriela Romero, and U.S. Congressman Paul Tonko. On the campaign trail, Appleers spoke out about improving public safety, curbing violence, and making Albany fun again. Come January, Appleers will be sworn in. She said she is ready to begin transforming the city on day one.
And I really meant it when I said today is about governing. We have convened members of my transition team here today. We are already hitting the ground running.
As of Wednesday, the mayor-elect had launched a new initiative with an accompanying website she is calling Activate Albany. Part of the initiative is a team dedicated to guiding Appleers' transition into the new role. The transition team is made up of a talent committee, responsible for recruiting people into the administration, and an Activate Albany committee, which will oversee what Appleers is calling the city's largest ever civic engagement initiative to collect residents' input on forming the future of the city. The Activate Albany committee will also be responsible for building a policy agenda for the Appleers administration. Appleers says the talent team is instrumental in building a vetted administration.
It's a new day, and we want to make sure that we are attracting individuals who have things to offer, who have gifts and talents, and they want to be of service to our city and our residents.
The Activate Albany Committee's work, she says, will help inform an action plan for her administration.
That will serve as my North Star and compass as it relates to my administration's mandate and policy priorities to serve the city of Albany. And so, essentially, what I would like to impress upon our residents and our business owners is that I've heard you, I feel you, and we too are ready to get to work to help transform our city.
Some members of Appleers' transition team include Maria College President Lynn Ortali, Broadview CEO Michael Castellana, UAlbany President Javidan Rodriguez, and Albany County Young Democrats President and aide to Congressman Tonko, Monica Lahey. Appleers said a survey to gather input as part of the Activate Albany initiative will launch January 1st. I'm Jesse Taylor.
The town of Plattsburgh supervisor has won a special election to represent the state's northern region in the New York Assembly. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
A special election was called by Governor Kathy Hochul after previous 115th District Assemblyman D. Billy Jones, a Democrat, quit his seat to take a job at Clinton Community College. The county chairs in the district are responsible for choosing the candidates in a special election. There was some drama amongst the Republicans when Congresswoman Elise Stefanik insisted they select her preferred candidate, the mayor of Malone. But the chairs did not relent and eventually chose newly retired New York State Troop B Commander Brent Davison as the candidate. The Democrats' process was more subdued, and they selected Town of Plattsburgh Supervisor Michael Cashman as the candidate. Unofficial election results show Cashman winning the Assembly seat 51-47%.
I would like to present to you the new Assemblyman from the 115th District, the great state of New York, Michael Cashman.
Whew. It is time to till the political landscape again. We need to replant decency and common sense and harvest dignity and respect, the fruits of a healthy democracy. This campaign is a coalition to make life more affordable, safer, and focused on building a new future.
Meanwhile, Brent Davison spoke at a low-key Republican watch party and thanked his supporters.
I want to wish Michael Cashman congratulations on his victory. I wish the district good luck. Hopefully things will move forward in a positive manner. The people in the district said they were looking for change, so I still think they're looking for some kind of change. So we just came up a little short. I don't know what else we could do. I thank everyone who supported me.
Davison was asked if his loss may be in part due to the federal shutdown.
I'm not sure. I definitely had several people voicing their displeasure with the shutdown as I was knocking on doors.
Cashman was asked why he thought voters chose him for the assembly seat.
I think that individuals are looking for a plan. I've said this many times before, that we plan the work and we work the plan. I can't speak to anyone else's races. I'm not interested in commenting on anyone else's. What my campaign laid out was that we're going to work on affordability. We're going to work on safety. We're going to work on protecting our future and planning for our future.
Cashman will resign from his town supervisor job and then be sworn in to the assembly after the vote is certified later this month. The town of Plattsburgh will appoint a replacement.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Rockefeller Center Christmas tree was cut down this week in East Greenbush. The Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons was there.
Judy Russ and her son Liam were running around the family property Thursday morning, jumping from supporting Rockefeller Center crew members to talking with family, neighbors, and reporters. Russ says the tree has been on her late husband's family property since the 1920s, making her son the fifth generation to experience the grandeur of the 75-foot-tall Norway spruce. Russ says this is an exciting moment, not a sad one.
This has been our backdrop, that we've had birthday parties here, weddings here, all kinds of celebrations, so it's just nice that our family tree gets to become the world's Christmas tree.
The holiday tradition at Rockefeller Center began more than eight decades ago and is billed as a quintessential New York experience. Russ's son's elementary school class came to watch, too. Russ says having his friends there to share in the moment was likely the best part of his day.
He thought it was so cool that they were all here. He asked to jump out the window to say hi to them. He's just really excited to share all this with his friends and the community.
The tree took all of 5 minutes to cut, but only after a week and a half of tying up branches, cleaning it up, and further preparing the tree for its more than 150-mile journey to Rockefeller Center. Eric Posey is Rockefeller Center's head gardener. In July, he got a photo of the tree from a friend of the Russ family, and it was chosen as this year's centerpiece soon after. Since August, Posey has been coming north almost weekly to care for the tree. He says the dry summer meant it drank almost 800 gallons each week of what he calls compost tea.
This morning we came and we were prepared. We set up everything. We preset some of the hookups yesterday. And when we came this morning, it was easier because we had a little wind today. We were watching out for the wind, but we had a perfect time frame to do it right when we planned to do it. So everything worked out great. We made a great cut and picked it up and laid it on the truck.
Posey, who has been the head gardener since 1995, says he's thinking about next year's tree already, saying it takes all year to prep. He says the ideal tree is something you'd want in your living room, but bigger.
It had a beautiful shape, and I got to tell you, this year, and when I came up in July, I had a beautiful green to it, and it looked really good.
The Norway spruce will arrive at Rockefeller Center Saturday. It will be escorted down to New York City, driving under 40 miles per hour for the safety of onlookers and the tree itself. The tree, which has the largest cones of any spruce, will be decorated with more than 50,000 lights and topped with a Swarovski star. Millions are expected to visit once it's in place in Midtown Manhattan. The lights will be switched on December 3rd during a live broadcast of Christmas in Rockefeller Center, and the lights will remain on until mid-January. This is only the second time in history a tree from the Capital Region has been selected to serve as the Big Apple's holiday centerpiece. The first was in 2022, an 82-foot Norway spruce from Queensbury. Maureen Kirsch has lived in East Greenbush for many decades, specifically how many she wouldn't say. But she says a tree coming from her community is special to her.
That's cool because everybody in the world sees it. Yeah.
Donor Russ says while her backyard is going to look relatively empty for a long time, Rockefeller Center is donating 2 Norway spruces, and a local farm has also reached out. After the holidays, the 45-foot-wide tree will be milled into lumber for Habitat for Humanity, something Russ embraces.
It's really exciting knowing that Habitat for Humanity is going to get the wood after the next family gets to build a home and make their own Christmas traditions and holiday traditions just like we did here.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcasts.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2545. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.